Chapter 17. In such a delicate condition, and bad as matters were at home, I am sorry to say at the office they began to look still worse. Not only did Roundhand leave, but Timor went away. Abednego became head clerk. And one day old Abednego came to the place, and was shown into the director's private room. When he left it, he came trembling, chattering, and cursing downstairs, and had begun, gentlemen, a speech to the very clerks in the office, when Mr. Bro, with an imploring look, and crying out, "Stop till Saturday," at length got him into the street. On Saturday Abednego Jr. left the office forever, and I became head clerk with 400 L. a year salary. It was a fatal week for the office too. On Monday, when I arrived and took my seat at the head desk, and my first read of the newspaper, as was my right, the first thing I read was, "Frightful fire in Houndsditch. Total destruction of Mr. Meshich's sealing wax manufactory, and of Mr. Shadrich's clothing depot, adjoining. In the former, was 20,000 L. worth of the finest Dutch wax, which the voracious element attacked and devoured in a twinkling. The latter estimable gentleman had just completed 40,000 suits of clothes for the cavalry of H.H. the cacique of Poyais. Both of these Jewish gents, who were connections of Mr. Abednego, were insured in our office to the full amount of their loss. The calamity was attributed to the drunkenness of a scoundrelly Irish watchman, who was employed on the premises, and who upset a bottle of whiskey in the warehouse of Messrs. Shadrich, and incautiously looked for the liquor with a lighted candle. The man was brought to our office by his employers, and certainly, as we all could testify, was even then in a state of frightful intoxication. As if this were not sufficient, in the obituary was announced the demise of Alderman Pash, Alderman Cali Pash we used to call him in our lighter hours, knowing his propensity to green fat. But such a moment as this was no time for joking. He was insured by our house for 5,000 L. And now I saw very well the truth of a remark of Gus's, viz. That life assurance companies go on excellently for a year or two after their establishment, but that it is much more difficult to make them profitable when the assured parties begin to die. The Jewish fires were the heaviest blows we had had. For though the Waddingley cotton mills had been burned in 1822 at a loss to the company of 80,000 L, and though the patent Erostratus match manufactory had exploded in the same year at a charge of 14,000 L, there were those who said that the loss had not been near so heavy as was supposed, nay, that the company had burnt the above-named establishments as advertisements for themselves. Of these facts I can't be positive, having never seen the yearly accounts of the concern. Contrary to the expectation of all us gents, who were ourselves as dismal as mutes, Mr. Bro came to the office in his coach and four, laughing and joking with a friend as he stepped out at the door. "Gentlemen," said he, "you have read the papers. They announce an event which I most deeply deplore. I mean the demise of the excellent Alderman Pash, one of our constituents. But if anything can console me for the loss of that worthy man, it is to think that his children and widow will receive, at 11 o'clock next Saturday, 5,000 L. from my friend Mr. Titmarsh, who is now head clerk here. As for the accident which has happened to Messrs. Shadrich and Meshich, in that, at least, there is nothing that can occasion any person sorrow. On Saturday next, or as soon as the particulars of their loss can be satisfactorily ascertained, my friend Mr. Titmarsh will pay to them across the counter a sum of 40, 50, 80, 100,000 pounds according to the amount of their loss. They, at least, will be remunerated. And though to our proprietors the outlay will no doubt be considerable, yet we can afford it, gentlemen. John Bro can afford it himself, for the matter of that, and not be very much embarrassed. And we must learn to bear ill fortune as we have hitherto borne good, and show ourselves to be men always." Mr. B. concluded with some allusions, which I confess I don't like to give ear, for to speak of heaven in connection with common worldly matters has always appeared to me irreverent, and to bring it to bear witness to the lie in his mouth, as a religious hypocrite does, is such a frightful crime that one should be careful even in alluding to it. Mr. Brough's speech somehow found its way into the newspapers of that very evening, nor can I think who gave a report of it, for none of our gents left the office that day until the evening papers had appeared. But there was the speech, and at the week's end, although round and was heard on change, that day declaring he would bet 5-1, that Alderman Pasha's money would never be paid. At the week's end the money was paid by me to Mrs. Pasha's solicitor across the counter, and no doubt round and lost his money. Shall I tell how the money was procured? There can be no harm in mentioning the matter now after 20 years lapse of time. And moreover, it is greatly to the credit of two individuals now dead. As I was head clerk, I had occasion to be frequently in Brough's room, and he now seemed once more disposed to take me into his confidence. "Titmarsh, my boy," said he one day to me, after looking me hard in the face, "did you ever hear of the fate of the great Mr. Silberschmidt of London?" Of course I had. Mr. Silberschmidt, the Rothschild of his day, indeed I have heard the latter famous gent was originally a clerk in Silberschmidt's house. Silberschmidt, fancying he could not meet his engagements, committed suicide, and had he lived till 4 o'clock that day, would have known that he was worth 400,000 L. "To tell you frankly the truth," says Mr. B., "I am in Silberschmidt's case. My late partner, Hoff, has given bills in the name of the firm to an enormous amount, and I have been obliged to meet them. I have been cast in 14 actions, brought by creditors of that infernal ginger beer company, and all the debts are put upon my shoulders, on account of my known wealth. Now, unless I have time, I cannot pay, and the long and short of the matter is that if I cannot procure 5,000 L. before Saturday, our concern is ruined." "What, the West Didlisex ruined?" says I, thinking of my poor mother's annuity. "Impossible. Our business is splendid. We must have 5,000 L. on Saturday, and we are saved. And if you will, as you can, get it for me, I will give you 10,000 L. for the money." B then showed me to a fraction the accounts of the concern, and his own private account, proving beyond the possibility of a doubt that with the 5,000 L, our office must be set a-going, and without it, that the concern must stop. No matter how he proved the thing, but there is, you know, a dictum of a statesman that, give him but leave to use figures, and he will prove anything. I promised to ask Mrs. Haggerty once more for the money, and she seemed not to be disinclined. I told him so. And that day he called upon her, his wife called upon her, his daughter called upon her, and once more the Brough carriage and four was seen at our house. But Mrs. Brough was a bad manager, and, instead of carrying matters with a high hand, fairly burst into tears before Mrs. Haggerty, and went down on her knees, and besought her to save dear John. This at once aroused my aunt's suspicions. And instead of lending the money, she wrote off to Mr. Smithers instantly, to come up to her, desired me to give her up the 3,000 L. scrip shares that I possessed, called me an atrocious cheat and heartless swindler, and vowed I had been the cause of her ruin. How was Mr. Brough to get the money? I will tell you. Being in his room one day, old Gates the Fulham porter came and brought him from Mr. Balls, the pawnbroker, a sum of 1,200 L. Miss Suss told him, he said, to carry the plate to Mr. Balls, and having paid the money, old Gates fumbled a great deal in his pockets, and at last pulled out a 5 L. note, which he said his daughter Jane had just sent him from service, and begged Mr. B would let him have another share in the company. He was mortal sure it would go right yet. And when he heard Master crying and cursing as he and Miss Suss were walking in the shrubbery, and saying that for the want of a few pounds, a few shillings, the finest fortune in Europe was to be overthrown, why, Gates and his woman thought that they should come forward, to be sure, with all they could, to help the kindest master and missus ever was. This was the substance of Gates' speech, and Mr. Bro shook his hand, and took the 5L8, said he, that 5L note shall be the best outlay you ever made in your life. And I have no doubt it was, but it was in heaven that poor old Gates was to get the interest of his little mite. Nor was this the only instance. Mrs. Bro's sister, Miss Doe, who had been on bad terms with the director almost ever since he had risen to be a great man, came to the office with a power of attorney, and said, John, Isabella has been with me this morning, and says you want money, and I have brought you my 4,000L. It is all I have, John, and pray God it may do you good, you and my dear sister, who was the best sister in the world to me till a little time ago. And she laid down the paper. I was called up to witness it, and Bro, with tears in his eyes, told me her words, for he could trust me, he said. And thus it was that I came to be present at Gates' interview with his master, which took place only an hour afterwards. Brave Mrs. Bro! How she was working for her husband! Good woman, and kind! But you had a true heart, and merited a better fate. Though wherefore say so? The woman, to this day, thinks her husband an angel, and loves him 1,000 times better for his misfortunes. On Saturday, Alderman Pasha's solicitor was paid by me across the counter, as I said. Ever mind your aunt's money, Titmarsh my boy, said Bro. Ever mind her having resumed her shares. You are a true honest fellow. You have never abused me like that pack of curs downstairs, and I'll make your fortune yet. *** The next week, as I was sitting with my wife, with Mr. Smithers, and with Mrs. Haggarty, taking our tea comfortably, a knock was heard at the door, and a gentleman desired to speak to me in the parlor. It was Mr. Aminadab of Chancery Lane, who arrested me as a shareholder of the Independent West Didlisex Association, at the suit of Von Stilts of Clifford Street, Taylor and Draper. I called down Smithers, and told him for heaven's sake not to tell Mary. Where is Bro? Says Mr. Smithers. Why, says Mr. Aminadab, he's once more of the firm of Bro and Off, sir, he breakfasted at Calais this morning. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.